Okay, resume recording. And Dan, you'll be able to get the recording from Matan. So Boker Tov, good morning, everybody. We're here at Matan and studying Judaism and the isms. And today we continue our study of Judaism and feminism. Judaism encounters modern feminism. And last week we looked at two different viewpoints. One was Rabbi Gideon Rothstein, who was arguing with Joel Roth of the Jewish Theological Seminary. And they were arguing about whether women can take on mitzvot and make themselves obligated just like men. And this is one of the, the obstacles to women becoming rabbis and this is something that Joel Roth, as part of the conservative movement, was trying to address. And Rabbi Gideon Rothstein, brought a whole range of arguments against them. And even though there's this one source, the Magen Avraham, who says women can take on the obligation of Sfirat HaOmer, it's like they've obligated themselves. Nonetheless, this does not create a parallel obligation that they can then suddenly perform mitzvot for men and be a shlichat tzibur, etc. So this was the argument that we had there. The second discussion we brought up was a piece by Rav Nachum Rabinovich, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, who just passed away a few weeks ago. He was the Rosh Yeshiva of Male Adumim, where I studied. A very, very special Torah scholar and Baal Midot and Anav. And he writes, if anybody remember what he wrote, what he spoke about, what did we address in his article? He says there are two tracks in the Torah. There are two tracks. Now, Marilyn, just an idea, and for anyone else who came on, you can, instead of pressing mute and unmute, you could just press the space bar and talk. The best way to keep Zoom interactive, just press the space bar, hold it down for a few seconds, and then you could share ideas. Now, Rabbi Nachum Rabinovich. Rabbi Nachum Rabinovich argued that there are actually two tracks in the Torah. There's the ideal track, and there is the practical track or the realistic track. The realistic track is that men and women over history, were treated differently, had different roles in society. But that's the realistic track. That's for whatever socioeconomic reasons, this was the case. The ideal track is that men and women are equal, just as they were created equally in the beginning of Sefer Bereishit. They were created equally until a man and woman sinned, and that changed their status toward each other. And the ideal, the Torah's ideal, not modern feminism's ideal, the Torah's ideal is for men and women to return to an Eden-like status where they are both equal again. And now equal doesn't mean the same. Okay, equality is not uniformity. He believes that they have different qualities, different strengths, different weaknesses, different roles to play. There is some element of role differentiation. But Rav Rabinovich, what we're seeing is that Rav Rabinovich embraces changes in modernity, and he sees some, he doesn't say this explicitly, but he sees certain developments in history as being positive, as fulfilling an original Torah ideal of men and women being on equal footing, which was the original ideal of the Torah. I'm just going to move this in here a little bit. This is Rav Rabinovich, and we looked at these two pieces last week, and what's interesting was one was an attempt by this Joel Roth to make men and women equal, having the exact same halachic footing. Rav Rabinovich, though, argues the long arc of history is that things will evolve and change, but they're not necessarily going to be the same. And that might be the fundamental difference between, how we look at this as halachic Orthodox Jews, whereas that the conservative movement looks at this from, that there may be, there's an attempt to, everything's got to be equal. Egalitarian might be the key term. They're trying to work through some halachic process there. But whereas Rav Rabinovich is saying they don't have to be equal. They don't have to be the same. They don't need it. There is still going to be gender differentiation, but there will be evolution and transformation and hopefully return to the original intention of the Creator when he created the world and composed the Torah. So those are two different models that we looked at. What we're going to get into today are two different, how should we say, two different disciplines where women's roles have evolved and changed over the last century. And those two areas are going to be in the area of one, of women's Torah learning, and two is women, number two is going to be women voting and holding public office. And we're going to see there's definitely been evolution in this regard and transformation. And we're going to see how this transformation is understood and under what circumstances it's sort of permitted and argued for or argued against. And we're going to use this to understand, get a better understanding of how Judaism is. So we're going to get into a little bit more nitty gritty today, but we'll try to maintain the larger perspective at the same time. So let's jump in. I shared the source sheets on WhatsApp, okay, an actual document that everyone could print. I'm going to share a link to the source sheets as well on right now on Zoom, and then I'm going to share the document on Zoom so that everybody can see this. One second, let me just okay. So if you want to access this on your one second. Okay, good. Share. Okay, so I'm going to share this into Zoom right now in the chat, and this way some people may want to access it on their own on their computer, and then I'm going to share it on my screen as well. So now I'm going to open up screen share, and we're going to go to the document. Good. Okay, so we are we're on the source sheet here. Okay, Matan, Judaism and Feminism, Part 3, two examples of accommodation. Let's start with women and Torah study. Right here, we're going to start with women and Torah study. Okay, are women allowed to study Torah? Are women obligated to study Torah? Which parts of Torah, yes, which parts of Torah, no? So we're going to look at that. We're going to look at that today. So first of all, we have in Dvarim Perek Yud Aleph. Okay, you know, I'm just going to mute everybody. I'm going to mute all. Again, you can just press on the space bar and then you'll be able to unmute yourself and speak. So for the Gemara, the Torah teaches us in Dvarim Perek Yud Aleph, ulemadetem otam et b'neichem v'daber bam b'shivtecha b'beitecha, and you shall teach your b'neichem. Now b'neichem can mean both boys and girls, or it can mean just boys. And what are you teaching them? To study, to talk the words of Torah wherever they are. And the Gemara teaches us in Masechet Kiddushin Daf Kaftel Amud Aleph, tenina lahadetan rabbanan, ha'av chayav bivno lamulo. And a father has an obligation to circumcise his son, leave doto, to redeem him, to redeem him after 30 days, ulamdo Torah, to teach him Torah, ulasio isha, to marry him, ulamdo manu, to teach him a profession. So minayin she'en acherin mutzuvin ulamda, how do we know that you don't have an obligation to teach girls Torah? The Amar Kras, it says, ulamatem adam ed b'neichem, b'neichem velo b'noteichem. So this is a rule that applies both just to boys, but not girls. All this is teaching us is that a father does not have an obligation to teach his daughters. But now we're going to see another machloket in the Mishnah, Masechet Sota, Paragimel, Mishnah Dalet. Omer Ben Azai says, Chayav Adam Leledet Et Bito Torah. A father has an obligation to teach his daughter Torah. Okay, and go to the next line. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Kol HaMelamed Bito Torah, Kilu Lomedet Tiflut. Whoever teaches his daughter Torah, it's like he's teaching her tiflut. What does tiflut mean? Can anybody tell me what is tiflut? What is tiflut? Anybody? Anybody? What is tiflut? Okay, so let's see in the the Rambam. We're going to see two different interpretations. The Rambam says limdat tiflut inyano ki'il limdat tiflut v'hu hashav v'divrei ha'hevel. Yeah, wasteful material. You're wasting your time teaching your daughter Torah. That's the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Ben Azai says you have an obligation, but Rabbi Eliezer says it's tiflut, it's a waste of time. What does Rashi say? What's tiflut? שמתוכה היא מבינה ארמומית ועושה דבריה בהצניה. Interesting. Rashi says that from Torah she's going to learn deception, and she's going to do everything in a deceptive, hidden sort of manner. This is an interesting statement, that maybe Torah will teach a person to be deceptive. Different than Rashi, and maybe there's a concern that, so you want it better not to teach her so that she doesn't develop these character traits. Let's now look at how the Rambam codifies this discussion about women studying Torah. Let's look at the Rambam. We're going to study his words very carefully. Okay, so Rambam. Isha shelamda Torah yesh la sachar. A woman who studies Torah, she has reward. Why does she have reward? Because even if you're not obligated in the mitzvah, you still receive reward for doing something. It's not the same reward as a man, because a man is obligated. She's not obligated. Because she's not commanded. When you're not obligated, you get a lower level reward, but you still get a reward. Number two. Even though she gets reward, this is a key phrase. I'm underlining this. The rabbis commanded us, one shouldn't teach their daughter Torah. Mipnei sherov anashim ein da'atam mechuvenet lihitlamed. Elahen motziot divrei Torah lidivrei hava lifi aniyut da'atam. He says most women, mipnei sherov hanashim ein da'atam mechuvenet lihitlamed. Most of them aren't able to focus. They don't have the background, the education. Elahen motziot divrei Torah lidivrei hava lifi aniyut da'atam. They'll spin off. They'll misinterpret, misunderstand the Torah as wasteful words according to their lack of understanding. As the rabbi said, kol ha-melamedet b'tot Torah ki'ilu lemdat tiflut. Now, whose opinion was this? Whose opinion is the Rambam quoting here? No? Whose opinion is he quoting?
Rabbi Eliezer.
He's clearly quoting Rabbi Eliezer's opinion, okay, that it's like teaching her tiflut. But then the Rambam adds a third layer, b'med dvarim amurim b'torah sheba'al peh. This is with regards to Torah sheba'al peh, the oral law. Aval Torah shebichtav, when it comes to Torah shebichtav, the written law, Tanakh, lo yomar ota lechatchila, don't teach it to her lechatchila, v'im limda eina kimlamda tiflut. And if you do teach it to her, it's not teaching her tiflut. So when Rabbi Eliezer says it, like teaching her daughter is like teaching her tiflut, for the Rambam, clearly what part of Torah is that referring to? That's referring to Torah Sheba'al Peh, the oral law. Whereas Torah Shebichtav, it's not considered a tiflut to teach her. Okay? Now, a few things about the Rambam here. First of all, the Rambam's language is very precise. Sherov Hanashim. So right away, you could, you know, perhaps derive from here, well, there may be exceptional women who might want to study. Another derivation that's important, that Shlo Yilamed Adam et Bito, okay? And if I'm not mistaken, the Taz brings up this point. It says, Shlo Yilamed, but what if she wants to learn on her own volition? Maybe you don't teach her, but what if she wants to? What if this person doesn't fit into the category of Rov Nashim, okay? And we also see for the Rambam, there's a difference between Torah Sheba'al Peh and Torah Shebichtav. The Rambam, Torah Shebichtav, does not apply to this idea of teaching her tiflut, and therefore he to some degree circumscribes Rabbi Eliezer's opinion. Okay, so this is the Shita of the Rambam. Now we're going to look at certain exceptions to these rules. Okay, certain exceptions. It seems like it's pretty totalizing. Women shouldn't study Torah. However, now we're going to see there are actually quite a few exceptions in halacha.
Question. Rashi is explaining Rabbi Eliezer, but he does not necessarily mean that he holds that way, because he taught his own daughters, So
correct. Nachon. So, well, some, you have to remember, Rashi is a parshan. Rashi is a commentator. Rashi is not necessarily always giving you his own opinion, right? So that's an important distinction to be aware of. I'm just looking for one thing here. Let me just see if I can find the opinion of the Taz on this issue. Okay, we'll look at it for later. Now let's see some exceptions. The Sefer HaChasidim, Rav Yehuda ben Rav Shmuel HaChasid, 1140 to 1217 in Germany. He says, Chayav adam lomor livnotav ha-mitzvot kikom piskei halachot, ma-shamru sham laven lisha tura ki lam lam da tifut, zeu omek talmud v'tami ha-mitzvot. He says, a person has an obligation to teach their daughter halacha. She's got to know what to do. Now, what about Rabbi Eliezer, who said that it's like teaching her tiflut? That's if you want to teach her Gemara and Poskim and Rishonim and Pilpul Abayda the Rava. That's about the Vayibir Rava. That's in theoretical Talmud. You have to teach her the halachot. She's got to know how to keep Shabbat. She's got to know how to keep Kashrut. You know, let's say, and I'm just joking here a little bit. So you're saying women should be in the kitchen. Well, guess what? In the kitchen, you have to know how to shech the kitchen and salt the chicken. And you got to know how to do hafreshot chumat u'masrot and distinguish between meat and milk. You have to know hilchot Shabbat. You have to know, can you turn on your dishwasher? There are lots of halachot in the kitchen that you need to know, right? So absolutely women need to know halacha. I will say, and I think this is somewhat unfortunate, that number one, that we don't teach halacha in our curriculum today. In the modern Orthodox world, I'll speak for myself, and I'm sure it's true in many of the schools you have gone to as well, we don't study halacha. We study Tanakh, we study Gemara, we teach kids all these things. They don't know practical halacha. And practical halacha is very important for girls and for boys. Now, Robin, you asked a question here. Will men also learn deception from studying the Torah? I have to say, letza'areinu, I don't want to say that Jews evade their taxes more than non-Jews do, but Jews sometimes, it seems like we come up with some pretty, pretty impressive schemes of how to sometimes avoid things. I'm not saying more or less than non-Jews, but sometimes you wonder whether Talmudic gymnastics have taught us are sometimes being abused for the wrong reasons, right? So yeah, there definitely have been men who have unfortunately who are Navel Birshut HaTorah, use the Torah for the wrong reasons. And this is something we all need to be careful about. Okay, let's go back to the source sheet. One second. I'm just going to go back to share screen. So we have the Sefer HaChasidim. What about Ma'ayan Ganim? This is Rav Shmuel Berevi Elchanan Yaakov Hervak Lati. Okay. Harkavlati. It's a tough word to pronounce here. What does he say? Very interesting. We're talking about here when a father teaches a daughter when she's very young. So he's saying, yeah, majority women, you know, and especially when you teach your daughter when she's young, even older women, there's a concern, as we've identified. But if a woman wants to be connected to the Torah and chooses it, they walk up to the Har Hashem. These are unique women. They should be supported. They should be encouraged. So here we're seeing that one can make a distinction between, you know, maybe the majority of women don't fit into the category of people you should teach Torah, but a woman who wants to do it, who chooses it, this is beautiful. It's wonderful. And their efforts should be supported. Okay. Now the Shulchan Aruch quotes the Rambam almost word for word in Siman Taf Reish Mem Vav. But then he says, at the end, in Haggah, this is Rav Moshe Israelis here. Let's go down. Okay, Haggah. This is Rav Moshe Israelis adding to the Sfaradi Shulchan Aruch. But nonetheless, women need to study practical halachas so that they know how to function in the world. Okay, so the Haggah, Rav Moshe Israelis adds this. Now I'm just going to look up. Can everybody see my screen right now? I'm opening up Bar Ilan. Is applications that we could see another source on this. One second. Can everybody see Bar Ilan right now opening up version 23 plus?
No, we have just your source sheet.
Oh, you said the source sheet. Okay, so let me share this on this screen. Okay, and this is New share. Let's go to Bailan. 1 second. Where is Bailan? Here we go. Bailan. Okay. So let's go to, and now you can see, it's really an amazing amazing tool here. So we've got a tour Shulchan Aruch. I'm going to open up the Shulchan Aruch. I think this is your Dea, Resh Mem Vav, 246. Okay, and here we have the halachot of studying Torah. Okay, and let's go to the issue about this halacha, Seif Vav, and we're going to look up the Taz. Okay, there's a commentator. One second. Ah, no, the Taz says something else here. One second. Okay, so this is interesting. First of all, he says, what is this basis of maybe he says there, you know, there's a notion of hakel. Hakel is when all the Jews come together and study the Torah every seventh year. And women are also involved with this. So he says, maybe that's proof that women shouldn't study Torah. But then he says, no, that can't be brought as a proof. But he says, he says, in our day and age, women study Tanakh. There's no one raises questions about this. He says, you know, women are not allowed to study maybe, or we don't generally teach them advanced analysis and Talmudic, this, you know, Chakirot, but to study the Torah, what's the problem? Even suggest that's what happened at Hakel as well. Okay, so this is another distinction that that is brought up. Okay, let's go back to the source sheet. Okay, new share, and we're back to the source sheet. Now we're at the Shulchan Aruch HaRav. Anybody know who wrote the Shulchan Aruch HaRav? Anybody know who wrote the Sefer? Okay, this was written by Rav Shneur Zalman of Liadi. This is the first Lubavitcher Rebbe. He also says, women have to know, they need to know practical laws. It includes Bechot Nida, Tefillah, Melicha, salting animals. Okay, I don't know, most men don't know this. Isur Yichud, this is a large percentage of the halachic system women need to know. Okay, now let's go to Rav Moshe Feinstein. Okay, he's asked a question about the Beit Yaakov movement, which we're going to talk about in just a little bit. And he's asked about the curricula in the Beit Yaakov movement. We're going to talk about Beit Yaakov in just a second. But the question that he's asked is, can you teach Mishnayot to the girls in Beit Yaakov? Hinei b'davar shenimtu b'vatei sefer liyaldot ulenarot shenikru b'shein Beit Yaakov. V'chadom asher rotzim ha'anala v'amorim l'amed First, he quotes the Rambam, which we saw that women are not supposed to study Torah Shebaal Peh. Al kol panim mishnayot shehu Torah Shebaal Peh. Tzivu chachamim shelo yilamdum, v'hu keilu limdum tiflut. Achein tzarech lemonam mizeh. He says women should not study Mishnah. V'rak pirkei avot. Only pirkei avot. Yishum shehu inyanei musar v'hanhagot tovot. That teaches you Musar. Yesh lamdam behezber la'oran la'avata Torah lo midot tova. That teaches women to love the Torah, to love good midot. Aval lo sh'ar ha'masachtot mitoch ha'pshitut ekatzer. He says, I'm going to keep things simple. So he doesn't permit studying Mishnah, but he permits Pirkei Avot, which is obviously an exception. It's more about morality and ethics and Ahavat Hashem. Now we move to the 20th century. We move to the 20th century where we really have a revolution in women's Torah study. And we start with a woman. Anybody know who was the woman who innovated the Beit Yaakov movement? Anybody know her name? What's her name? No?
Yeah.
Who's the woman who started Beit Yaakov?
Was it Schneer?
Sarah Schneerson, right?
Schneerson.
Okay. She's the one who pushed Rabbanim and her same age to start schooling for girls. You have to remember, until the 1920s, girls did not receive a Jewish education officially. Maybe some did at the home, but you know, we live in a very luxurious society where kids study till the age of 25 today, essentially. This is not the norm then. You'd work in their house, churning butter and making clothing and doing laundry and plowing the fields. Okay, the times have changed. Now, Rav Yisrael Meir came. Yeah.
Sorry, can I ask? Didn't Raphael Shimshon Hirsch set up a girls' school as a form of education as well in Frankfurt?
Possible. I don't know. It is possible. I wouldn't be shocked if he did. It was the type of thing that he would have done. So she goes to the Chafetz Chaim and says, hey, I need your support. The Chafetz Chaim is one of the greatest gedolim in Europe at the time. And this is what he says. It appears that all this applies to earlier times, when all children lived in their parents' home, and the bond of tradition was strong for each individual. Each learning from their forefathers, as the verse says, ask your father and he will tell you. In that context, we were able to say that women should not learn Torah, but rather learn from their father's behavior. However, today, due to our great sins, that the bond of tradition is very weak, and people no longer live in their parents' home, in particular those who go abroad to study secular wisdom, it is certainly a great mitzvah for women to learn Chumash, prophets, writings, wisdom of the sages, such as ethics of our fathers, Menorat HaMaor, another book of Jewish ethics, and similar books, in order that they strengthen their holy faith. If we don't do this, they will certainly stray from God's ways and come to violate the entire Torah. What is the rationale for teaching women Torah today, according to the Chafetz Chaim? Who could tell it to me? Summarize for me, what is the rationale?
It sounds to me like it's to strengthen them against everything else that's out there. Mm-hmm. Secular wisdom, knowledge, culture, whatever.
Nahon. What are we dealing with? We're dealing with the difference between what's called a mimetic tradition. A mimetic tradition is a tradition in which you learn everything from osmosis. You see your mother, you cut you know, the vegetables with a separate knife, so you know to cut the vegetables with a separate knife. You see your mother lighting the candles, so you learn to light the candles. You see your father taking Trumot to Masrot, you know how to take Trumot to Masrot. This is how people used to learn things, through osmosis, through watching and observing their parents. But guess what? Kids are no longer at home. The mimetic tradition breaks down in modern times when people go abroad to study. And the home is no longer what it once was. The Jewish home isn't a place of Jewish learning in the past like it was. And therefore, what do we need to do? We have to supplement it with actual Torah study and textual study. Now, is there any mention of the word feminism in the Chafetz Chaim's formulation here? Is there any mention of feminism? Is this about feminism? Or this is about, he would argue, there's an idea of Eit Lahasot Lahashem Heferu Teratecha. There is a time when you have to nullify the Torah in order to maintain it. How do you nullify the Torah in order to maintain it? The classic example is Moshe breaking the Luchot. Moshe broke the Luchot to teach the people, you better shape up or else you're going to lose this for real. Break something in order to strengthen something else, right? He breaks the Luchot to keep the Jewish people, to wake them up, to keep them strong. So the same idea, the same principle applies here. Sometimes you have to change Torah. Sometimes you have to change how we practice in order to maintain it. The Chafetz Chaim is not interested in feminism. He's interested in Jewish identity. He's interested in Jewish continuity. He's interested in halachic observance. And he believes that this is going to be the best way to get people to stay strong to the tradition by opening up schools for girls. But if you don't do this, then we have the threat of assimilation and secularization. So this is using a new method to accomplish the same goal, the same original goals that we always wanted to accomplish, which is Torah observance. This is the Chafetz Chaim. It's important to understand his rationale, which is arguably very different than feminism. Feminism is about that women, you know, have to be equal to men. Women have to have the same rights as men. Women have to get the same salaries as men. It's not that we're opposed to these things, but it's just a very different rationale. You have to understand how different these rationale are, okay? And again, there's differentiation here. We've seen, teach women Torah, but don't teach them exactly in the same way you teach men or the same topics you teach men, okay? Torah is playing a different role in men and women's lives. For men, it's more about the obligation of Torah study. For women, it's a little bit more about Jewish identity, even though obviously Torah helps to build Jewish identity for men as well. So let's go now to Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. We're going to see also a much broader view on women's education today. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshiva Taratzion, passed away just a few years ago, 5 years ago, if not mistaken. Tremendous, tremendous Torah giant. And he writes, "Gee, would anybody like to volunteer to read? Do I have any volunteers?"
Can I make a comment?
Sure.
The Chafetz Chaim, by the way, what he's pointing out is that women are studying secular subjects.
Yeah, fact. Good point.
If you're studying secular subjects and your Jewish education is like at a six-year-old level, you're going to...
Yeah, Femo. So Rav Lichtenstein is going to pick up this issue. Good. Yeah. A very good point, which creates even more of a reason to move away from the tradition. You know, you're like, well, what do I, you know, I haven't been given any access to this tradition. And yet I'm studying chemistry at the highest levels of university, right? So mm-hmm. There's this major discrepancy. Okay, let's look at Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. Who would like to volunteer to read?
I can.
Go for it, Marion.
To my mind, it is desirable and necessary, not only possible, to provide intensive education for a woman even from Torah Sheba Alpeh sources, whether resorting to the argument that since women are engaged in all professions, why should they be specifically limited regarding Torah? Or because of the words of the Chafetz Chaim, when Beit Yaakov was founded, that if the Rambam can say that it is necessary to teach a convert the essentials of Judaism, an individual who grows up in a Jewish context should all the more so be afforded such an education. That is to say, it is to stop.
No, keep going.
That is to say, it is clear that it is necessary to provide a woman with the education and knowledge that make it possible for her to realize a strong and rooted faith and to face reality with dignity. Women today receive a broad general education and many attend universities. And there they come into contact with diverse worldviews and philosophies to the point that the knowledge and values of Torah are urgently required by women. In my opinion, what is necessary in order for women to be adequately prepared from a Torah perspective for practical living is far more than what it is being taught today. Torah education for women must be strengthened both quantitatively and as well as qualitatively, including the teaching of all aspects of Torah. Regarding Torah study for women, there is an additional aspect, i.e. the obligation to ensure the continuity of the Jewish tradition. For this purpose, it is desirable that the learning be intensified, because in this way, she deepens her own commitment, her senses of responsibility. When something is well learned, it creates personal commitment.
Okay, so Rav Lichtenstein is drawing upon all these different explanations. One, the discrepancy between women's higher level learning and their lack of learning in Judaism. The what he calls the obligation to ensure continuity of the Jewish tradition. For Rav Aaron, intensive Torah study is the best way for a woman to connect to Jewish tradition. Okay. And therefore he thinks we need to expand Torah learning broadly, quantitatively, and qualitatively. Now, let's talk about Talmud itself. And you know what? It's worth actually just studying the history of this a little bit. We'll go through America and in Israel. In America, in the Orthodox world, the first institution to open up in women's Jewish learning, anybody know what it was? It's still open today. Anybody know?
In America.
New York City, yeah. An organization called Drisha. Drisha. Which was an institution of higher learning for women. This was in 1979. Already, I think it was 1977, maybe, Reb Soloveitchik gave a famous shiur. He gave a Talmud shiur to women at Stern College. And that that was a big deal. Actually, there's a famous picture of it. I'm going to try to, let me pull up this picture. Because it's worth seeing this picture. Here. Okay. Let me just, can everybody see the screen, or I'll do a new share? Mm-hmm. Okay. Look at this. Okay. Okay, you see this picture right here?
Mm-hmm.
So who's in this picture? This is Rav Soloveitchik. Okay. This is Rabbi Norman Lam. Zecher Tzadik Divracha, who just passed away yesterday.
Yeah.
Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshiva University for many years. Brilliant, brilliant thinker. We're going to have to do some learning about him. Okay, unbelievable. This is Rav Mordechai Willick. Okay, who's a Rosh Yeshiva at YU today. I don't know who this is. I'm not sure who that is.
Rabbi Saul Berman, maybe?
Is that Rabbi Saul Berman? It's possible.
I think.
Yeah? It's possible it's Rabbi Saul Berman. Okay, so this is that famous shir. You could maybe it's maybe Rabbi Saul Berman. Yeah. There's a whole article about this here. I'm going to share this with you on WhatsApp, so all of you could read this in your own free time. But this is that first shir, and it's a little bit about the context. And this was a huge moment in for women's learning. Okay. I'm just going to share this on the chat here, so you can read this article in your own free time. But let's go back to the source sheet. So Rav Lichtenstein goes on now, what about Talmud? Now, so we were talking about the history. So there's Drisha. Stern College opens up its own program called GPATS, which is an intensive higher level learning, which still exists today. My sister actually studied there. And that's post-college at Stern College. And also they have Talmud tracks for girls at Stern College today. And then many other institutions open up: Nishmat, Matan, Migdal Oz, which is the sister school of the Gush, Midrashet Lindenbaum, Midrashet Moria, Michlelet Moria Yerushalayim. So a number of different institutions have opened up both in Israel and abroad. And Michlala is another classic in Yerushalayim, a little bit more Haredi-ish, but for women's higher learning. So there's been, it spawned a whole movement of women's learning, and it's quite exceptional what exists out there today in the world. So now, in the same vein, I'm not opposed to teaching women Talmud. Keep going, Marilyn.
Oh, me. Okay. Yeah. In the same vein, I'm not opposed to teaching women Talmud. From a practical point of view, this is somewhat difficult because many women seem to lack the motivation. A social support is missing, and more importantly, there is lacking a desire to be unconditionally committed to such learning in the future. It is necessary to understand that in Talmud study, the first steps are difficult, and they do not naturally engage one's interests, since one should not be blind to present societal realities. It is clear that it is improbable that women will develop the same level of intensity as that of men. I'm also not convinced that it is desirable to press women to study Talmud in such an intensive form. After all, halacha does differentiate between men and women in this matter, and their respective lives roles are also different. But when one speaks about the ability to study a page of Talmud, to understand and enjoy it, I see no reason to deny these teachings to women. And it is even necessary to establish this as an integral part of the school curriculum, an actual shiur. This is the way I teach my daughter, and so was my wife educated. This seems to me to be the recommended approach regarding women in our generation.
Ah, so what is he saying here? Is he saying that he would force women to learn Talmud?
No.
No. But what he is saying is that there's such spiritual enjoyment that one receives from this. And he would never want to take this away from women. He would want women to understand this and enjoy it. And so what's interesting, he actually supported the creation of a school called Ma'ayanot, which is in Teaneck, New Jersey, where this is basically the first, it's an all-girls school where they study, Talmud at a high level. I also studied at a school called Frisch Yeshiva High School, where girls also studied Gemara. We actually studied, and it was mixed. Girls and boys were in the same class, and we'd studied Gemara together. It was also modeled after a school that Rav Soloveitchik had built in Boston, and Maimonides and Ramaz, a high school where they also studied, girls studied Gemara, these, and Yeshiva Flatbush as well. All these schools in the New York area were in Boston, you know, taught girls Gemara as well as other things. He doesn't think it's an obligation. He doesn't think it's for everybody, but he believes that there's tremendous spiritual benefit for those who might find it interesting. Okay, so this is Rav Lichtenstein expanding, you know, in a significant way, what he thinks women should be exposed to today. And Migdal Oz is indeed built on this type of curriculum of women being exposed to the highest levels of Torah learning. Now let's go to Rav Chaim David Halevi, who is a Sfaradi chief rabbi of Tel Aviv. Let's see what he says. It seems like in earlier periods of history, when it was the sole job of women to run the household, and women were not educated at all, there was a concern that the study of Torah wisdom would cause damage to those women who had no access to other knowledge. However, in our times, where women learn general wisdom with great seriousness, why should they be prevented from learning Torah? Okay, so this is a rhetorical question, and obviously the answer is they should not be. Okay, now we're going to move on to the final source and in this section. This is by Rav Yehuda Henkin, okay? Rav Yehuda Henkin is a great posek, and he writes about this Rambam. Remember, the Rambam says, Tzivu, the Chachamim commanded us. I underline that word, Tzivu Chachamim, right here, that a person shouldn't teach their daughter wisdom. What does this phrase mean, Tzivu Chachamim? So the Rambam wrote that the sages command that man not teach his daughter Torah. Everywhere in the Rambam's Mishnah Torah, the phrase the sages commanded signifies proper and desirable behavior, but not an enforceable Isur V'Heter. It's not prohibited, it's just desirable. And he gives all these examples. He writes the sages commanded to be extremely meek, and they also commanded this in itself from anger. It's not a command, it's not a mitzvah, a prohibition. It's a good thing, okay? And he thinks the same thing is true here. In the same way, the rabbi's statement, the sages command the man not to teach his daughter Torah because most women are not oriented to learn. It's not a categorical decree, but a general recommendation. It sources Rabbi Elazar's statement, anyone teaches daughter Torah, which is also not in the form of a halachic decree. Rabbi Elazar did not say it is forbidden to teach one's daughter Torah. Nachon, he didn't say it's forbidden. It therefore comes as no surprise that there have been exceptions and that some scholars taught Talmud directly to their daughters. So this is really key. And if we go back to Rabbi Eliezer's statement, it's not a full-fledged prohibition. All of this in a generation that needs it. Rashi explained Tiflut, okay, today, let's go to today. Danny, you want to read this? Today, women. Today. Danny Sakar, you want to read this? You have the source sheet? Today, women, who would like to volunteer? Leslie, want to read this today?
Yeah, sure. Today, women who are highly educated in secular subjects but are lacking in Torah contrast the shallowness of their Jewish knowledge with the depth and interest they find in other fields. This is the opposite of the situation described by Rambam. It is precisely the poverty of women's Torah education that leads them to imagine the Torah as being trivial. Eight la'asot la'shem today is to expand and deepen women's Torah studies on condition that there are halakhic grounds for doing so. So, as I have shown, to seek to prevent all women from learning Talmud, as in previous generations, is an example of the piety of fools and causes souls to be lost, God forbid. But even without this consideration, to the extent that they are exceptions to the majority, it is permitted to teach women Torah.
Women Talmud. Okay. And there's an interesting source here. Basically says, Imisha yirat shamayim machlitash limutra yikrevot ala bara matov. One feels that she'll connect to Hashem by studying Torah. That's great. Ach b'shum ofen lo mitoch chikui l'masei hagvayin. It shouldn't be done in order to emulate what men are doing. If a woman says, I'm exactly like a man, that's why I'm doing this, that's not good. However, if women want to study, because they want to connect to Hashem. That's a beautiful, it's a beautiful thing. Okay, what do we see here in terms of the rationale for women, for women studying Torah today? What would you say?
It actually reminds me of my childhood. My father always taught his two daughters that they can be what they want. If they want to be brain surgeons, they can be. I had my education at the Lubavitch, and when I said I wanted to be a rabbi, they said it's impossible for women, and it took me 30 plus years to come back to the religion.
Really? That pushed you away. Wow.
Yeah.
And now you're doing Daf Yomi, Leslie, huh?
I've done it. I've done the first round.
Sorry, you finished it already. Wow, starting your second cycle of Daf Yomi. Okay, kol hakavod. Now, I will just say, and learning it with Don, right? You guys learned it together, huh?
Yeah.
Wow, yafeh. It's interesting because Dafka in the Chabad movement, do you think they're supportive of women studying Talmud? What do you think?
Not sure.
No, not really. We did Tanya.
Okay, you did Tanya. Well, the truth is that the Lubavitch Rebbe was, I'm not saying for everyone, but he was supportive of women studying Torah. He was actually very supportive of women's leadership, the Lubavitch Rebbe. It's a big emphasis of his. There's a magazine that he used to put out, for kids. And it was very important. I remember this anecdote. When they put out the magazine, it was very important to him that there be pictures of boys and girls in the front of the magazine. So the girls know that they also need to be leaders in the Jewish world. And I have to say, the Chabad model, in some ways, Chabad has succeeded in creating women Jewish leaders that are powerhouses, that are really strong leaders. I mean, look at these women at these Chabad homes. It's never just the guy who runs the Chabad house. Okay, they're a tag team, and these women do unbelievable work. Real amazing leadership, and they get something right. The Chabadnikim in this regard, in terms of building and grooming women to be leaders in the Jewish world. And again, it doesn't appear to come from a place of, well, men have to be exactly like men. There is sort of clear differentiation, especially in the Chabad world, but women are, play very public roles as well. It's not that women have to be leaders in the kitchen and men are leaders in the public space. They're both deeply involved in running the Chabad house, having public presence. So it's very interesting, the model that they've created. Sometimes I'm a little envious in the Tilu Mi, my Orthodox world, that we need to bring a little bit of that Chabad part of their educational system into our own. They seem to get something right. Okay. Now, I am just curious, has anyone here ever had the opportunity to really sit and study Gemara, study Talmud over an extended period of time? I know, Leslie, you have. Anybody else would say that they've sort of tried it And I'm curious, is anyone, I'm curious what the experience is like. Has it been like a positive experience, a challenging experience, interesting, not interesting? I'm curious how you'd respond.
I have to say, Rabbi, that I have since I was a little girl, I've been deeply, deeply involved in Jewish learning and Jewish history particularly. And I've always found the little bits of Gemara and Talmud disturbing. I get almost aggravated by these backwards and forwards of ancient arguments and can you move your pot on Shabbos? Can't you move your pot on Shabbos? I personally, the little exposure I've had to it, which is just conversations and this and that, have always felt, I know there's great, that it's incredibly good for mind training, etc. But for me, it's always been a whole lot of fuss about nothing. That has been my limited exposure to it. And I've never felt I want to study it in any great depth.
Okay. Anybody else? I'm just curious. Anybody else want to share, what their experience has been like?
I found it interesting insofar as I also studied law. I mean, that was part of my profession. And to me, it's very much like studying law. It's looking at two different case laws because if you know the ages of the Tanaim and the Amoraim and et cetera,
et cetera. All the generations. Together. Yeah.
Okay, it's very interesting what Leslie just said and mentioned her law background. As an English teacher, I was once doing the oral Bagrut test in a secular high school. Uh-huh. And I was very shocked that I was interviewing all of these students and many of them told me they were doing 5 points in Gemara.
Wow.
And I couldn't understand it. I asked the teacher, did they make this up? You know, what's going on here? And she said, no, they do 5 points in Gemara in high school because they want to go to law school.
Uh-huh.
Interesting. Okay.
Makes sense.
So let's now move on with the little time that we have left. We'll at least start the next topic, okay? And then we'll do a compare and contrast between them. So now we're moving on to women voting and participating in the political realm, okay? So this just a little bit of historical background. The 1920, there was a major debate in Eretz Israel with regards to women voting, okay? Because for the first time around the world, women were starting to vote in national elections in Europe and other places. And the question is, how were the women's suffrage movement? I'm sure some of you have seen the movie Suffragette. Yes, no? And
yes.
And so this also came up in what was then the British Mandate. And there was back and forth and pamphlets and arguing and protests, and rabbis had to address this issue. And we're going to look at two different rabbis who addressed this issue. One of them, Rabbi Avraham Yitzchak HaKohen Cook, who was at the time the chief rabbi of...
Palestine.
But that's only 1921. I think when this happened, he may have been only the chief rabbi of Yerushalayim, if I'm not mistaken.
Maybe. Okay?
And then you have the chief rabbi of Tel Aviv, whose name is Rav Chai Ben Zion Chai Uziel, and he's a Sfaradi rabbi. He will become the first Sfaradi chief rabbi of the state of Israel. Okay, they overlap, but Rav Cook dies in 1935, and Rav Uziel dies in 1953, and they're going to have very different views about women voting. And certainly about women holding public office. And we're going to compare and contrast some of the arguments made in the area of Talmud Torah and here. So let's start with Rav Cook. Rav Cook writes on the election of women in September 1919 in Jerusalem. It's translated by Tzvi Zmor, a professor at Hebrew Bar Ilan. And he writes an open letter to the Honorable Committee of the Mizrahi Association. He's writing to Mizrahi now, okay? So let's see what he says to Mizrahi. Who would like to volunteer to be the reader? Do I have any volunteers? How about Fermet? Would you like to read this? So well. How about Elaine Saltzman? Would you like to read?
Yeah, I'll volunteer if you want.
Who is that?
Shoshana.
Shoshana, go for it. Shoshana. Chava.
Okay, wait a second. But I'm just, okay. An open letter to the Honorable Committee of the Mizrahi Association. I was honored to receive your request that I express my opinion concerning the pending question of electing women to the Assembly of the Representatives of the Jews of the Land of Israel. Despite my not being worthy of being approached, I consider that circumstances require that I expound my opinion on this matter with greatest possible brevity. It seems to me that the issue can be analyzed under three headings. A, regarding the law, whether the matter is permitted or forbidden. B, regarding the general good, whether good for Israel will result from an affirmative answer or from a negative one. And C, regarding the ideal, whether our moral consciousness opposes the prospect or supports it.
Okay, so he's going to look at it from these three perspectives. Okay, do you think Rav Cook is going to allow women to vote or not allow women to vote?
No, not allow.
you think he will not allow them. But wasn't Rav Kook very open-minded and
not about women. He was a little bit medieval in his thoughts of women, as far as I know.
Okay, so let's see what he says. Let's see. We must expound. Keep going, Shoshana.
We must expound our attitude on each of these three aspects. For I wish the discussion to be addressed to all our ranks, to the fully faithful of Israel, for whom the halachic ruling is central, to those for whom the nation's good is decisive, and to those whose main regard for the moral ideal in itself.
So Rav Kook was always trying to unify three different parts of knowledge. One is Torah, the second is nationalism, and the third is morality. Okay, these are the different parts of the Jewish Kabbalah: the universalists, the nationalists, and the religious. Okay, so that's why he's going to address these two things. So regarding law, keep going.
Regarding the law, I have nothing to add to the words of the rabbis who came before me. In the Torah, in the prophets, and in the writings, in the halacha and in the agadta, we hear a single voice that the duty of fixed public service falls upon men. For it's a man's manner to dominate and not a woman's manner to dominate. Okay. And that the roles of office of judgment and of testimony are not for her. For all her honor is within. Striving to prevent the mixing of sexes in gatherings is a theme that has run throughout the entire Torah. Thus, any innovation in public leadership that necessarily brings about mixing of the sexes in a multitude, in the same group and gathering, in the routine course of the people's life, is certainly against the law.
Wait, just remind me, what are we talking about here?
Women voting.
So about women voting or women being elected. Okay, they sort of come together.
Women being part of the National Assembly.
Yeah, so he's saying, what argument is he making right here? What is this? What is this argument right here?
What he's saying is that something like with the Knesset today women should not be sitting with men and talking with them as equals about public.
The argument is from an argument of?
It's an argument. He sees it as a locha because in the Torah, men gathered separately from women.
Okay, so he sees an issue of tzniut. It's a tzniut issue, right? He
Absolutely.
Also sees that men and women have different roles. The man's job to dominate politics is the, let's say it's the realm of domination or, you know, power, and it's not women's role to do this. Okay, keep going. Next to be discussed.
Next to be discussed is the aspect of the general good. Regarding this, I think it is our duty to inform all our brethren, whatever their orientation, all of whom surely wish the good of our nation and the enhancement of our right in the land of Israel, of the foundations of the British government's Balfour Declaration, which has planted for us a young shoot from which redemption will grow. The Declaration rests on the correct view shared by the best of the Gentiles and the best of the British people, particularly that our link to the land of Israel is something divinely sanctified. They are influenced in that view by the holy light of the Bible, which is treated as holy by the greater part of civilized nations today.
So this is an interesting argument. He's saying the British who gave us permission to settle Israel, the Balfour Declaration, right? They want us to follow the laws of the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
They want us to be the biblical people. That's why they believe in this vision. Okay, I'm going to keep reading. And the spirit of the Bible is perceived even now by the wealthiest part of the world as leaning generally to the side of modesty, fearing any depravity which might come into the world by reason of human weakness with respect to the sexual impulse. The special feeling of respect towards women is therein based, and her soul is centered on domestic life and the improvement in her life and all the delicate human works branching out from them. Rav Kook is saying, if we become too progressive, we're going to lose the support of the world to rebuild a Jewish nation in the land of Israel. The enemies of Israel, both internal and external, make much use nowadays of the libel that the young Yeshuva in Israel has lost its link to the Holy Book, and therefore is no link right to the biblical land. This is an interesting argument, because remember, we're making the case that we have the right to be in Israel because this is our holy land and we're connected to it and its values, right? But if we're coming back to be a totally secular nation that has no connection to the Bible, then our political, geopolitical argument, historical argument is weakened. That's sort of what he's saying. Mm-hmm. Our duty is to take a stance. Yeah, go for it. Did somebody want to, what do you think, Marilyn?
What do I think?
Yeah, well, it sounds like, were you trying to say something?
No, I was just kind of thinking. He's brilliant, Rav Kook. He's just a brilliant man. And he's right. In a way, he is right. Because a lot of the guys who voted in the Balfour Declaration were Bible-thumping Christians. And they did believe that our right to the land was based in the Torah. More than we believed it, I think.
Yeah, I think there is some truth to that, that they were right. But part of me feels, anyone else want to share another view on this?
Yeah, this is Don. I think Rav Kook was fairly big on the uniqueness of Israel, of the coming together of the Jews into this back to the land. And that was unique, and the uniqueness of it wasn't called Israel at the time, but the uniqueness of Israel should be promoted.
Correct. That's another part here, and he's going to get into that in more detail and basically say, we didn't come here to be schleppers. We didn't come here to create a national project of assimilation. We came here to create something unique. But doesn't this feel a little bit far-fetched? As a reason why women can't vote in elections?
I think the whole idea is, I think the misunderstanding, I think that the nations, those who did accept the right of the Jews to Israel, was because they saw the Jews as a nation, not as a religion. It's those that saw the Jews only as a religion that they had no right to a land. It was only the beginning of the nationalism, the Jews as a nation rather than as a religion, who began to say, well, yes, maybe they do have a right to a land of their own. They are a nation.
Uh-huh. I'm sorry, maybe I missed it, but I don't see where he says anything that would be against women voting. This seems to be more about women taking commanding positions.
Okay, so let's see where he goes with this. Now, hence our duty is to see to it that the inception of our movement towards a measure of autonomy based on our own political social character be properly marked by the sign of biblical integrity and purity with which our life has now been imbued from time immemorial. This will be so only if we avoid the European novelty, alien to the biblical spirit of the national tradition deriving from it, of women's involvement in elections and public life, which is tumultuous and noisy and involves multitudes. It is worth emphasizing that we're treading the path of our redemption, not in order to be mere followers of European culture, which at least as to morality and the purity of virtues is defunct, but in order to proclaim evermore unto the entire world our message, vigorous, holy, and clear, just as it springs from our internal fountainhead. In any event, in the present context, we ought to walk upright at this time of great need to emphasize our national character and our social life upon our land. We can rest assured that this assertiveness will confer upon us the world far more weight than we might attain by imitating others, a course of action that usually results from inner weakness. Okay, so let's stop here. There's more to do. We will continue this Bezrat Hashem next week, but we are already past 1:00. I don't want to go too long again. Okay, we'll continue this Bezrat Hashem next week. Don, if you don't mind uploading this, okay, and lots more to discuss here. Women voting and holding office. And again, we're going to come back to analyze Rav Kook versus Rav Uziel versus everything we spoke about with regards to Talmud Torah. Okay, wishing you all a great day, a great week. Yeah, say again.
Can you put the link to Rabbi Soloveitchik on WhatsApp?
Sure, yes, I'll put that on WhatsApp right now. Yeah. Okay. So wishing all of you a great day. Okay. Kol tov.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Okay.
Thank
all
you.
The best.
You too. Thank you.
Okay.
Bye.